Vienna Rec, die Stadt im Gespräch.
In today's edition of Vienna Rec, you will hear the recording of a conversation with contemporary witness Lucy Waldstein, titled Escape from Vienna, Exile and a New Beginning. Lucy Waldstein was born in Vienna in 1930. In the conversation, she talks about her childhood in the 9th district, her family's escape in 1938, the separation of her family, and her exile. She also speaks about her internment in Trinidad and her later new beginning in the United States. The conversation was moderated by Milly Lee Rabinovici from the Jewish Austrian University students and Juno Schwings-Handel from the Association Gedenkdienst. The event took place in cooperation with the Mauthausen Committee Austria, the Association Gedenkdienst, and the Jewish Austrian University students, and was recorded on May 6, 2026 in Depot.
Schönen guten Abend, herzlich willkommen im Depot. Schön, dass Sie da sind, schön, dass ihr da seid. Wir begrüßen ganz herzlich Lucy Waldstein fürs Zeitzeugengespräch und freue mich, dass so viele gekommen sind. Der Ton wird aufgezeichnet. Wenn Sie nachher eine Frage stellen, ins Mikro sprechen, wird das auf unserem YouTube-Kanal auf Radio Orange, Dorf TV, Radio Froh zu hören sein. Also das Interesse ist riesig und ich bedanke mich beim Gedenkdienst, beim Mauthausen-Komitee, bei Jö für die wunderbare Kooperation und gebe einfach gleich das Wort weiter. Wir haben noch einen lang spannenden Abend vor uns und bedanke mich ganz herzlich fürs Moderieren auch. Schön, dass Sie da sind.
Genau. Genau, von mir noch ganz kurz zwei Worte. Ich bin Max Folger, ich bin einer der aktuellen Gedenkdienstleistenden am Leo Baeck Institut in New York, noch bis Ende August, genau, weil meine Kollegin und ich die nächsten beiden Wochen in Wien verbringen. Tatsächlich verknüpft dadurch, dass die Collection in diesem Jahr, also die Austrian Heritage Collection, wo die Gedenkdienstleistenden seit 30 Jahren aktiv sind, die wurde 1996 gegründet. Diese Collection führt seit eben 30 Jahren Interviews in New York, den Vereinigten Staaten und Kanada mit Personen österreichisch-jüdischer Herkunft, die aus Österreich flüchten konnten während des Holocaust. Seit etwa 1,5 Jahren führen wir vor allem Interviews mit der zweiten Generation. Wir durften tatsächlich auch im Januar mit Lucy ein Interview führen und auch mit ihren Töchtern Karen und Lisa, die auch heute bei uns sind. Genau, mit denen durften wir ebenfalls in den vergangenen Monaten ein Interview führen. Und weil die Collection in diesem Jahr 30 Jahre alt wird, noch kurz eine Ankündigung, die noch ein bisschen in der Zukunft liegt. Wir veranstalten dazu auch zwei Veranstaltungen. Einer in New York am 15. Juni, also falls jemand zufällig in New York ist, am Center for Jewish History, und eine zweite Folgeveranstaltung wird dann am 8. Oktober in Wien im Jüdischen Museum stattfinden. Wir werden in New York mit drei Personen der zweiten Generation über die Geschichte der Collection und auch die Zukunft und auch den Übergang der Zeitzeugenschaft von der ersten zur zweiten Generation sprechen. Und in Wien am 8. Oktober werden wir mit vier ehemaligen Gedenkdienstleistern aus den jeweiligen Jahrzehnten des Bestehens der Collection dann über ihren Dienst, über ihre Erfahrungen, über ihre Motivation, diesen Dienst in New York spezifisch zu leisten, und auch über ihre Perspektiven über diesen Wechsel der Zeitzeugenschaft sprechen. Also das wird man ganz sicher noch auf den Kanälen des Vereins dann in den nächsten Monaten dann ganz sicher verfolgen können. Genau.
Herzlich willkommen bei diesem ganz besonderen Zeitzeugengespräch heute. Mein Name ist Christa Bauer, ich bin die Geschäftsführerin vom Mauthausen-Komitee Österreich. Das Mauthausen-Komitee Österreich ist die offizielle Nachfolgeorganisation der Überlebenden des Konzentrationslagers Mauthausen und seiner Außenlager. Und für unser Auftrag und unsere Verantwortung ist es eben, die Erfahrungen, die Erzählungen und die Stimmen von Überlebenden und Zeitzeuginnen aufrechtzuerhalten, weiterzutragen und so vielen Menschen wie möglich zur Verfügung stellen zu können. Die heutige Veranstaltung findet in Kooperation mit dem Verein Gedenkdienst statt und mit der jüdischen Hochschülerinnenschaft. Und unsere drei Organisationen haben eins gemeinsam, nämlich den Wunsch, Zeitzeuginnengespräche zu organisieren und eben sie so vielen Menschen wie möglich zur Verfügung zu stellen und kostenlos eben zu ermöglichen, die Geschichte von Zeitzeuginnen wie Lucy Waldstein hören zu können. Es ist uns wirklich eine ganz, ganz besondere Ehre. It's a great honor for us that you are here with us, Lucy. Very welcome. Lucy Waldstein wird am Freitag auch beim Fest der Freude am Heldenplatz ihre Rede halten und ihre Geschichte erzählen. Und es wird ganz, ganz sicher das Highlight des Fests der Freude sein, wenn Lucy sprechen wird. Ich möchte heute ganz bewusst bei diesen Willkommensworten nichts über Lucys Geschichte erzählen, weil es gibt niemanden Besseren, als Lucy selbst ihre Erfahrungen zu erzählen. Dear Lucy, it's we are so thankful that you are here with us and that you are sharing your story with us today.
Thank you very much.
Wir werden uns jetzt noch kurz weiter auf Deutsch vorstellen. We're gonna do introduce us quickly in German and then we're gonna switch finally to English. hallo, ich bin Milli Lee. Ich bin die Co-Präsidentin von den jüdisch-österreichischen HochschülerInnen. Und genau, wir sind eine Organisation, die jüdische Studierende vertritt, politisch sowie aber auch natürlich in einer Community und einen Safe Space zu schaffen für alle für euch, die uns noch nicht kennen.
Und ich bin Juno vom Verein Gedenkdienst, ein historisch-politischer Bildungsverein, der auch Gedenkdienstleistende ins Ausland jährlich entsendet. Es ist schön, dass ihr alle hier seid. Voll. Und jetzt würden wir auf Englisch switchen.
We are very honored to welcome Lucy here today. We appreciate that she came all the way from New York this week to celebrate the 81st anniversary of the liberation from the National Socialism and share her story with us. Lucy Waldstein was born on December 7th in Vienna as the youngest daughter of Alice Liesel Fischer and Ernst Otto Fischer. Her older sister, Inge Maria Eva Engel, was also born in Vienna on December 18th, 1927. In Vienna, they lived at Müllner Gasse 35 in the 9th district.
After the so-called Anschluss in March 1938, Lucy's father, Ernst Otto Fischer, lost his position as a newspaper editor in April 1938. In the wake of increasing persecution and following the suicides of close family friends, Ernst Otto, Alice, and their two daughters fled from Vienna. Now, 81 years after the liberation from National Socialism, she is here with us to share her story with us. Lucy, do you maybe want to introduce yourself with your own words?
Sure. My name used to be Lucy Fischer, and I married Alex Waldstein, and I was born, as you mentioned, at 35 Müllner Gasse. And I was there this afternoon at the very kind invitation of the Mittelbauers. And as far as Vienna goes, I was 7 years old when I left. So I don't remember very much other than what I've been told. But we left in 1938 in July, I believe.
You said you remember things from stories that you got told, and there were certain events that made you and your family leave Vienna.
Yeah, well, my father was chief editor of the Kronenzeitung at the time. And we lived, the four of us, my father, my mother, my older sister Inge, and I lived a perfectly normal, quiet life. They had a lot of friends. When my father came home after work, which was usually late at night, they went out to a coffee house and with their friends. We had a nanny or someone who took care of us. And that's the life we had. Until my father lost his job. He was thrown out. And one day, he answered the phone, and I didn't know what the conversation was at the time. However, he turned white, and he turned to my sister, who was practicing the piano, and he said, "Stop playing." What I found out later is that my best friend, Ruthie, and her parents, who were also friends of mine, had no way of getting out. They had no option. And he turned on the gas and put this family to sleep. However, a better thing was that a colleague of my mother's, who also lived in the building, met her and said, "Would you meet me on the roof later on?" And she did. And she said, "Why didn't you just come to my apartment?" So he said that he was conscripted into the SS and he couldn't be seen entering a Jewish apartment. But he asked whether we were making any preparations to leave, and she said, "We're working on it." And he said, "You leave tonight. They're coming for your husband tomorrow." And that's how we left. Our nanny took us to the train station. My parents came separately. And various friends each came carrying a suitcase, so it didn't look as though we were leaving. And we were able to go to London, which was very lucky. But it was on a capitalist visa, which meant my father couldn't work there. So he couldn't earn a living, and we left with absolutely nothing. So they heard that Trinidad was accepting emigrants, Jewish emigrants, but they didn't know what Trinidad was. As far as they were concerned, it could have been a jungle. So they didn't want to take children there, put us in a boarding school, which was a convent, and left for Trinidad, leaving us at the school. In the school, the nuns separated us so that we couldn't speak German to each other, which forced us to learn English very, very quickly. And we spent a school year there. Normally, when children are placed in convent schools overseas, there's a minimum of 2 years that they have to stay. It just doesn't make sense otherwise. But while my parents were in Trinidad, my father was treasurer of the Jewish organization there. There were quite a number of European Jews there at the time. And one day, two gentlemen who were pleasure cruising the Caribbean on a yacht stopped by and wanted to donate some money to the organization. But my mother wouldn't take it because she says, "No, you have to wait for my husband." And while they were waiting, she started crying and lamenting, "I miss my children. I want my children here." And he said, "Well, just make sure they come in the summer," she said. "There's no reason that they can't get here. And if you need anything else, let me know." And they left. And sure enough, my parents decided we wanted to come to the United States. And this gentleman, Mr. Goldenthal, sent us an affidavit to go, which was wonderful. However, my father was born in Czechoslovakia, and there was a quota of how many people from different nationalities they would accept in the United States. So we were admitted entrance under the Czech quota. In 1944, my father needed surgery. He had to have gallstones removed. Not a big deal, really. However, with the conditions that were there, with hospitals and sanitation, he did not survive. He's buried in Trinidad. Thank you. So now Mr. Goldenthal was informed that it wasn't working. So he could have said, you know, too bad. But he didn't hesitate a moment. And my mother, who was born in Vienna, we were now on the Austrian quota. And now he took on responsibility of a widow with two children. So that was exceptionally nice of him. And eventually, in November of 1945, we got on a passage on a freighter, and that brought us to the United States. The freighter docked in Mobile, Alabama, which is the South, and when we got off the boat, it was a culture shock to see the different signs there, colored, white, on water fountains and things. So getting away from one form of prejudice, here we see another. So it was a little disconcerting. But we were only in Mobile one day. That night, we boarded a train that brought us to New York City, which was our goal. In New York, my sister, who was 15 at the time, looked a lot older and lied about her age. We got a job. And my mother went to work. And I went to high school. And then I started college. But by the time I was 19, I had to go to work to help support the family. So I got a job in a factory, a metal stampings factory, as a secretary. But within about a month or so, I became manager of the factory, and I had 70 people working for me. So that was what happened, and I worked there for about 10 years. In the meantime, I met my husband and got married and continued working until I became pregnant and ill with the pregnancy, so I had to stop. And from that time on, I didn't work while I was married. After I had my older daughter, Karen, we moved to Chicago because my husband's business brought him there. He was working, traveling in the Midwest, and we moved to Chicago. And in Chicago, I had my second daughter, Lisa. So we were living in Chicago for about 9 years when my husband's father wanted to retire. And he had two men's stores in Brooklyn, in New York. And my husband was familiar with men's clothing, so he asked him to come and take over the store so he could retire, and he did. And so we moved back to New York in 1973, late 73. In 1975, my husband died. So now I had the two girls, and I took over the two stores, which I knew nothing about, and all of a sudden I'm running two men's stores. I did that for maybe 5 or 6 years. And in the meantime, my sister had married an Austrian, Walter Engel, and he was in the diplomatic service. He worked for the Voice of America and RIAS. He wrote the commentaries and read them over the radio, and they were stationed in Germany. And after that tour was over, he was working in Washington, D.C., the capital, and they moved to Maryland, which was a suburb. And so after the 5 years in the men's store, I decided to move closer to my sister so that the girls would have a home, which they certainly didn't have in New York. And I lived there, and I did odd jobs, worked in different places. And finally, in 1986, my sister and I bought a needlework store, which is another thing I knew nothing about. But you learn what you have to. And we had that for 14 years until we both retired. And I need help. Where am I? Yes, both my daughters in the meantime were in New York. So they said, what are you doing? Oh, my sister had moved away. Her husband passed away. And she, unfortunately, had dementia and moved into a home near where her children were. So I was there alone again. So the girl said, why don't you move back to New York, closer to us? Which I did in 2009. And I've been living in New York ever since.
Thank you for telling your story and for your introduction. Maybe let's talk a little bit more about your time in Vienna as a child. You grew up there in the 9th district.
Yeah.
Do you still remember which school you attended and how your relationship with your classmates was?
I think the school, I don't know whether it was on Grüne Torgasse or whether it was the name of the school. I'm not sure. I do have several report cards still, but it doesn't name the school. I did not mention at the time when the Premingers killed themselves, all the teachers made the children, the Jewish children, sit in the back row and ignore them completely. And the other children were tormenting us, you know, not physically, but pushing us. And they weren't very nice. It didn't last very long because we left. But however, before that, we would go to Liechtenstein Park. I do remember the park. We went to Schönbrunn. We went to St. Stephen's Church. We went, we used to go to Italy every summer, and that was great. We stayed on a hotel right on the beach, and that was great. And that's pretty much what I remember.
And also in Vienna, your mother was volunteering in the
Jüdische Kultusgemeinde. Yes, she knew the person who ran it, and he was a close friend of the family, and she called him Uncle Emil. So, she volunteered there. She also, incidentally, volunteered at the Kronenzeitung. And when the new editor came in, she had eyes on him. He ignored her and asked her to buy presents for his girlfriends. And that she said it was 3 years I chased him till he caught me. And they got married at Seidenstetten Temple, which we went to see yesterday or the day before. And had my sister and me, and lived a very nice life until 1938.
In the interview with the LBI, you were also talking about some other events that you remember from since the so-called Anschluss. Do you want to tell us some more about it?
I don't think so, because no internet, no television, children knew nothing. They were sent out of the room, please get me a glass of water or something like that. The parents didn't talk in front of the children, and they had no way of getting information, so I really knew nothing.
And when you fled to England, how do you remember that? How do you remember being treated there?
We were treated very nicely. We were not happy there. We missed our parents, of course. And we were the only Jewish children in the entire school, but we were treated very nicely. We were always hungry, because in England you eat the main meal at midday. And in the evening, maybe a porridge or a broth or something, and we weren't used to that. So we worried our parents by saying we're hungry, which of course we weren't really. But other than that, I liked the school. We had to wear a uniform. And when we, at the end of the school year, we were very happy that we were finally going to be reunited with our parents.
Can you maybe describe for us what Trinidad was, and also where you spent your time in Trinidad there?
Well, when my parents first got to Trinidad, I guess they found some way to make some money. I don't know quite what. When we got there, which was a year later, we were there a short time until the British interned us as enemy aliens. So we spent 15 months in an internment camp with barbed wire in barracks. And there were a lot of Eastern European Jews and a lot of Western European Jews. And they quibbled there just as much as they did anywhere else. They didn't get along there either. But we had to live together, so we did. And I was the only girl at that age with 9 boys. So we were mischievous. You know, we had a good time. We had no idea. We were with our parents, so what do we care where we're living, right? And we would catch scorpions in little matchboxes, and the barracks were on stilts. So when the teenagers pushed aside the benches in the dining hall to dance to a gramophone, we would release the scorpions and watch the girls scream and jump up on benches. So, you know, and they did allow the teenagers out of the camp to attend school. And I and the boys were taught by someone who used to be a teacher in Vienna. He gave us lessons.
And what was the experience for your family and for your mother in the camp?
Well, they both they wanted to leave. I mean, they didn't want to stay there. My father was given a job as a maitre d' on the American base in the dining room. And there he was, a journalist, which is a far cry from being a maitre d'. Plus, language had been his tool, and he struggled with English. So my father, having gallstones, was always on a diet, so she volunteered to cook in the diet kitchen for anyone in any way that they needed a diet, and she did that. Yeah.
Do you remember if you talked there in Trinidad with your close friends or family about what happened in Europe during this time? Do you remember if you talked with your close friends or your family there about what happened during this time in Europe?
I really doubt that very much. I don't think so. No.
And in Trinidad, was there any like Jewish cultural life?
They did make an organization. I mentioned my father was treasury of that organization. They actually even put on theater productions. You know, there were a few professionals who had lost everything as well, and they would put on a play. My sister was in a couple of those, yes, because she looked a lot older than she was, so yeah.
And you also talked about how fast you learned English and that you also stopped talking German mostly with your family.
Yes, when we arrived in Trinidad, my mother and father were on the dock waiting for us, and she came charging forward, rattling off something in German, and I asked my sister, what did she say? So, yeah, it did come back, and we did talk German to each other, but only in Trinidad. I think once we got to the United States, we all spoke English.
And was it an active decision that you stopped talking English once you came to the U.S.? Or,
well, my sister kept a diary from the time she was 9 years old. And when my mother was throwing suitcases together, she threw the diary into the suitcase. And one day, in England, she said, as of today, I'm going to write in English. And there's a page where she switches from German to English. And incidentally, my younger daughter is a teacher, and she had a colleague who is the theater person. And they took the diary, translated the whole thing, and he wrote a musical play out of it, which is on YouTube if anybody's interested. Yeah.
You said in Trinidad you don't think that the Holocaust or whatever happened in Europe was discussed yet.
It was discussed, but not with me.
Do you remember the first time that you heard about what happened and started talking about it?
It was not a major discussion. I had lost my father. My mother was desperate, trying to support us. We just didn't have those discussions.
And later in life, you met Walter Engel.
Yes.
The husband of your sister.
Correct. He was the son of the gentleman that she called Uncle Emil at the Kultusgemeinde. And he was 16 years older than my sister, but we met them, and he started coming to our apartment, and all the neighbors thought that he was courting my mother because they were very close in age, but actually he was courting my sister, and they got married and had 5 children, 14 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren. So far, yeah, the great-grandchildren are still coming.
Now you told us that the Holocaust and like talking about it wasn't a big topic.
Right.
When did it start being a topic, or did it? Because now you're here and telling your story.
Well, you know, people would ask questions, you know, how I got here and so on, but I certainly never thought I would speak publicly about it. I'm not a public person. I've never done this before. So I think Zoe and Max were the first people who interviewed me, really.
And was it an active decision to start talking about it now? How did you
come? Not quite. Not quite. When we went to our apartment on Müllnergasse, we met the Mittelbauers. And that was 31 years ago. And now in September, my daughter Karen has a son, my grandson Alex, who the three of us came here. And again, we went to 35. And their daughter Anna was living there. And she welcomed us, and we met up with them. And I started talking to Walter. And so he said, would I consider coming to the fest? And I said, sure, not having any idea what it was, and certainly not thinking I would be the speaker. So here I am.
I mean, great, and thank you. And it's great that we can hear your story by this surprising way.
Thank you.
Maybe one last question from us.
Sure.
In the interview you did with Max and Zoe, when you were asked about your citizenship, your citizenship.
Yes.
You were very strict when being asked about the Austrian one and not wanting it.
Well, I was offered citizenship, but being the age I am, I figured, you know, it doesn't make sense. However, when they offered it to descendants, that was a different story. Both my daughters and my grandson have EU passports, so I'm the only foreigner here.
So now you're in Vienna visiting again, and what do you think about Vienna? What is your relationship now? How does it feel like being here?
I think it's a lovely city. I love visiting it. I don't feel an emotional tie to it, but I sure like it.
Okay, then I think we're going to open the round for questions.
And also for the questions, please keep in mind, like, be sensible about it. And also, like,
keep in mind that she's old and deaf.
I'll try to remember. First, thank you very much for sharing your story. I would be interested, you mentioned the discrimination towards Jewish children in school.
Do you remember if it was more like the discrimination and suppression built up over the years? Or was it really the day of the Anschluss where it started that you as a kid could feel the hate towards the Jewish people?
Can you kind of tell me, like,
he asked if it, like, the discrimination that you felt as a Jewish person or as a child, if it got more over the time or if it came very suddenly with Anschluss.
I didn't feel it. At that time, I did not feel any discrimination. I didn't know what it was.
And it was short. It was just like a month before the left.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know why I lost my best friend. I wasn't informed what was going on. I had no idea.
Ja, hallo Lucy. Wir kennen uns ja ein bisschen. Hello Lucy, we know each other. I wanted to ask about your feelings when you first came over to Vienna and when you visited your apartment.
I remembered a number of things about the apartment. I was very hesitant to go in. The girls were pushing me, knock on the door, and I said no, because the door was locked. But a man walked in, and they pushed me in after him. And so we went upstairs. I did remember which apartment it was, and the door was ajar, because you had construction going on at the time. You weren't home. Your wife was there, Michaela, and she was very welcoming and very kind and showed us around. And I did remember certain things about it, but I can't say it was an emotional attachment, but it was certainly an emotional moment.
I've got another question. As someone with your backstory, how do you feel about this, I just call it the rise of fascism, especially in the USA under Trump? How does this feel for you?
I promised not to curse in public. What can I say? Antisemitism, let's face it, it's always been there. But he gave everyone a license to come out in the open with it. And he is a horror. What else can I say?
Thank you.
A frightening horror.
Hi, thank you for you being here and telling your story. I have a question, if maybe you have met someone throughout the years from when you lived here in Vienna, or second question, if you met other people who have a similar history?
Oh, yes. I have met, we met a lot of people in the camp whom we remained friendly with. Many moved to the States, many moved to Canada. And I've heard their stories, of course.
Thank you also for me. I was wondering, since you said that your sister is quite a bit older than you, and she moved to Germany as an adult with her husband, if I understood correctly, do you know if she came back to Vienna and how she felt about it as an adult?
You're going to have to...
Well, the question is, if your sister ever came to visit Vienna, since she was quite a bit older when she left, both fled Vienna and also probably...
Did she visit here?
Yes, and how
yes,
she felt.
Yes, she did. Yes. Okay. I very shortly thereafter, she did. She came with her son and his daughters. She did come also, yes.
And I figured that she continued to speak German or no? I was just wondering if she maybe had a different connection.
She speaks much better German because she was with her husband in Berlin and Bonn for 9 years. So she was fluent in German.
And did that change her experience of the city? Like, because you said that you don't feel an emotional connection. Did she still feel a connection to Vienna differently than you did?
Did she feel connected to Austria?
Most probably. She was considered an adult. I was immature for my age. She was mature for hers. So it seemed like a lot more than just the 3 years between us.
Hi, thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm wondering if you could talk more about what it was like to be such a young woman working in a factory in New York. I know there's a long history of Jewish factory workers in New York City, so that would be interesting to hear about.
Well, I was hired as a secretary, and I did that for about a month or so, and the manager left. I don't know for what reason, but there was no one, and I just took over and became the manager, which meant I had to do physical work. You know, there were machines. I had to set dies and help with the packing and whatever needed to be done.
Maybe then I would have a question about the role of your daughters, because it seems like it is a topic between you three, and that you are playing a big role in that you are here tonight.
Definitely. yes. I don't think I would have ever gotten the speech done without them, because I just told them the story and they did the work. Yeah.
And did they motivate you to visit Vienna for the first time? Like, you also told that they were motivating you to go to that flat.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. They did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, are there any more questions? Then,
is your sister still alive?
No, my sister passed away about 13 years ago. Okay. Yeah. But her youngest son came with his wife, so that's nice. They're here.
Then maybe as a final question, we would like to ask you if there's anything that you still want to add to today and anything that you feel like you haven't said yet.
No, I can only tell you I'm very impressed with all the organizations that I've met or heard about. And there's so much more going on here than in the United States. I mean, it stands to reason they don't have that much invested in it, you know, but it's very impressive.
I mean, it's very important, and thank you that you came here today. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, we feel very honored.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you all for coming.
You have just listened to a conversation with contemporary witness Lucy Waldstein, titled Escape from Vienna, Exile and a New Beginning. She spoke about her childhood, her family's escape in 1938, the separation of her family, her exile, and to later new beginning in the United States. The conversation was moderated by Milly Lira-Binovici from the Jewish Austrian University students and Juneschwings Handel from the Association Gedenkdienst. The event took place in cooperation with the Mauthausen Committee Austria, Gedenkdienst, and the Jewish Austrian University students, and was recorded on May 6, 2026 in Depot.